You're listening to The Jay Barker Show on Tide 100.9 in Tuscaloosa.
Man.
Hey, welcome to the middle of the week. Very sunny Wednesday. Still chilly, and next week it's going to get darn right cold. But right now, we're just talking about Wednesday, talking some basketball. It's Matt, Lars, Wyatt. Lars, how you feeling today?
I'm doing great, doing great. Good night of rest. Watched the movie Gravity last night with Sandra Bullock, and wow, she just puts on a great performance. I can't believe I haven't really watched that movie in detail. George Clooney is also really good. It's a really good flick, really good flick.
It's the way you said that. It sounded like you watched the movie with Sandra Bullock.
No. So, yeah.
You wish.
Yeah, Sandra Bullock was not in my bedroom watching the movie with me. Charlotte was in the bedroom with me.
Oh, well, now everybody.
My lovely 8-pound dog, you know. Yeah.
I'm a big Sandra Bullock fan. She has a lot of ties to Birmingham, Alabama, too. You know, her dad lives here, so.
Anyway, I didn't know that.
Her uncle is a guy named Jess Bullock, who owned a very, very successful ad agency. And I'll tell you a quick story, as long as it's kind of a slow day. They both were sitting in a little bar called J-Rags down on Southside Lakeview. And I walked in, I said, hey, and Jess said, hey, come on over, have a drink, and introduced me to Sandra Bullock's husband. And for the next hour, I proceeded to try and get her cell number.
How did that work out for you?
Zero. I did so very kiddingly, but I've also, he also told me when we were sitting there, that Sandra Bullock won't do anything above a, what do they call it now? A mature. She won't do movies with certain language and certain exposure. I've always thought that was pretty cool. So I had no idea we were going to start the show with Sandra Bullock in your bedroom.
Many years ago, I was on a cross-country flight from L.A. to New York, and I'd gotten bumped up to first class, and I ended up sitting next to Andy McDowell, the actress, and I'm not kidding. She cried the entire way, and I tried to be very gently to say, "Can I help you with anything?" And then she just was like, "No, no," and I just left her alone. But it was really bizarre. She was really upset about something, and you don't see a public figure be that emotional. But maybe she felt comfortable because it was in first class and somewhat private, but. I guess not anymore. So
wow, never heard that one, Lars. And we swapped many a yarn.
Yeah, we have swapped many a yarn. Have you sat close to anyone famous on a flight before?
Gary Sanders, voice of the UAB Blazers.
Yeah.
No, not like that. I'm not in the same arena as that story. That was pretty cool.
Then just
brush with greatness, they call it, Lars.
Well, last week when I was flying on American, and luckily got bumped to first, and ended up sitting next to a pilot. And man, it was just fascinating the stuff he was telling me. And he said, you're more likely to crash on takeoff, but you're more likely to survive that crash than you are if you crash on landing. So, and then he's like, yeah, the whole life jacket thing when you're over the Pacific Ocean? You don't need the life jacket. If we're going down, we're going down. Trust me, you won't need a life jacket. And I was just shocked at his forthrightedness.
Well, the thing about the life preservers, I kind of figured out. Now, the landing and takeoff thing and damage and life loss there, I didn't really think about it.
But the safety record is just amazing for American commercial aviation. And he also told me, this was interesting too, we were coming into Atlanta and it was at night. And behind us, there were 6 planes lined up. Right to land right after us. And so right when we landed, we kind of turned and we could see the 6 planes. And he said, you know, all those planes are 3 miles apart. So that last sixth one was 18 miles away. And I never would have realized that. But when the planes approach the runway, they slow to an extent that the plane behind them gets to be about a mile and a half to a mile behind the plane in front. But it's a very sort of, regimented system, obviously, that they go through. And he absolutely hates flying, he said, into Washington, Reagan National, and can't stand O'Hare. Said Atlanta's was just really one of the best airports for pilots. And said San Francisco can be tough. LaGuardia is really tough. But anyway, enough travel stuff to get this show started.
Start the show. No.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I can tell you, you and I have spent so much of our life on the road. Like, you and I could just talk travel stories for days. And I don't know if listeners find it interesting or not, but I do, just because it's so part of my life. And it's always interesting whenever you take an extended trip, a work trip, say like 4 days, 5 days, whatever. In my travels, it's been my experience that something new happens every single time. And it's not necessarily a good thing, right? Like right. Sitting in first class and a guy cutting his toenails or something right next to you.
Ew.
Yeah. Those are fun times. But,
I haven't had many gross experiences like that. I've been very, very fortunate. In fact, I think it's probably been more the opposite. But anyway, enough Sandra Bullock and travel talk to start the show. last night, Alabama victorious, played very, very well there at Coleman Coliseum, defeating South Carolina 74-47. Here's a stat for you. Alabama talking defense, wanting to play great defense. In the second half, Alabama held South Carolina at 18 points. 18 in 20 minutes. Well, maybe Nate Oates has gotten them going as far as defending. Really starting to like this Auburn team, too. Texas A&M is like trying to put a cat in its container. They're going to fight you so hard, and they're good. I love Buzz. He's an odd guy, but he's a heck of a basketball coach. And Auburn pretty much took them out, too, 66-55. So right now, both of our representatives from the state of Alabama in the Southeastern Conference are 2-0 and looking good.
Yeah, I thought Alabama, they came out really slow. And Nate Oates said after the game, we weren't really ready to play. Had turnovers in four of Alabama's first five possessions. South Carolina scores 13 pretty quick points. But then from then on, it was just Alabama really dominated. And look, we know that Mark Sears is the leader of this team. But last night, he was just spectacular. He's Alabama's only returning starter. We know that. And we knew that he was going to have to become the leader of this team. And he was going to have to become, if not the go-to scorer, he's going to have to increase his scoring output. So far, wow. I mean, he has absolutely exceeded all expectations. Currently leads the conference, averaging 20.2 a game. Last night, scored 31 on 10 of 13 shooting, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and was almost equally impressive. Aaron Estrada, he's really starting to hit his groove, I think, and find his comfort level. Looked great from really all over the court. Scored 17. I think he's sort of locked up that second backcourt position. And, not that it was in danger of losing it. But, so Estrada, 17 points, 7 rebounds, 2 steals. And South Carolina's leading scorer, Mechie Johnson, who's coming in at 18 a game. In the second half, Alabama's defense really just absolutely put him in a vice. And he was 3 of 11 for shooting in the second half. And, Nate Oates always talks about the importance of defense, even though we think of Alabama as an offensive first type of team. But their defense was just outstanding last night, Matt. All right, you're listening to Big Noon Sports. We'll be right back. Got a lot more to get to.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny this afternoon, the high today around 50. Clear tonight, the low 35. Tomorrow, partially sunny and warmer, the high 59. Friday, cloudy and windy with rain and thunderstorms. Storms on Friday could be severe, the high 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 45 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Mortgage. Wyatt, Lars, and Matt are with you. Just to finish up talking a little bit about Alabama and Auburn basketball, Tigers defeated A&M. That was at Neville Arena by a score of 66-55. I think Johnson led the way. He had 22. But Auburn and Alabama both 2-0. And I think UAB plays, and they're 2-0 in the American Conference. So this is the way it was in the 80s all the time. I don't know that it will last, but it sure was fun covering a lot of basketball back then. And you had very delightful, colorful characters at side court with Sonny Wimp and Gene Bartow. So that was a lot of fun. Just decided to look in the rearview mirror for a few minutes there, Lars. Any other notes or observations on Alabama-Auburn basketball?
Well, I do have a note on college basketball in general. The lead here, Matt, Nebraska beat number one Purdue 88-72. Wasn't even close. Clobbered them. Nebraska's first win over the top ranked team in the country since 1982.
What?
Yeah, 1982. First time. And in Fred Hoiberg, the mayor, finally has things going the right way in Lincoln. Nebraska's 13-3 overall, 3-2 in the Big Ten. They just were on fire from beyond three, hitting 14 threes. And Purdue had been on top of the polls for four straight weeks. And, you know, the first time they lost to Nebraska since 2019. And afterward, the fans stormed the floor. And Matt, I'm just telling you, it was scary again. Scary again. The Purdue's coach said somebody is going to get hurt or worse after this. And look, these are my people, Nebraska, man. But you get so students get so excited. It's just it's like a mob mentality, and if you fall down and you can't get up, you can easily get trampled to death. I mean, or trampled, maybe not to death, but hopefully you wouldn't. It certainly could happen, but these storming of the floors has just got to stop. And we've talked about this a lot, Matt. I don't know what the best thing to do is. If you just have a ton of security on, I mean, you know, you can put a little yellow rope around the fans. I don't know what the answer is for college basketball. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I have this thought. First of all, we'll address the issue of safety, but I will say this. Since 1982, that's kind of amazing in its own right. But beating Purdue, I don't care where you're playing. That's a pretty big deal for all the Cornhusker fans.
Yeah.
But to me, basketball and rushing the field and football are two totally, not totally different, but they're very different. And it's based on, my opinion, is on space, because you got a lot more crowd coming down a lot faster in basketball. You're not jumping over fences and running out on the field. And then even if there are just thousands of people, they're spread out over a football field. You got thousands of people spread out over a basketball floor. I think the danger factor, hey, Charlotte, the danger factor is incredibly high.
Yeah.
She doesn't like rushing to court either. But I don't know what you do. I think it's easier to solve the issue in football because you can just spread a lot of security and, as you said, put horses out there. You can't do that on a basketball court.
And I will say,
too, I don't know how to approach the situation on a basketball court.
I apologize for my dog. I swear, my neighbor knows I'm doing the show right now, and he'll just bring his dogs out and put them in my front yard as a joke to me. Ha ha. But Matt Rhule, Nebraska's head coach, he also rushed the floor with his daughter after the buzzer sounded. And, it's not, because it's just, I just take this stuff seriously because I've been in the middle of it. And it can be really frightening, especially when I was about 11 years old. I've talked about this a lot. I was on when fans stormed the field at Memorial Stadium in Lincoln after beating Oklahoma. I got knocked down, and I thought for sure I got separated from my older brother and a Nebraska player. I was on the ground. A Nebraska player kind of jumped on top of me and protected me. Right, he was on like his elbows and knees, and just as the fans were running by, and to this day I swear he may have saved my life. And so, and I've never written about this, maybe I should, because, or maybe we should make this like a cause for this show, because I really do worry that somebody is going to get hurt in a serious way or even worse, because it's just chaos out there. It's absolute chaos.
Yeah, that's a bad look for Matt Rhule, but anyway, you're right, it has to be addressed. I know they're talking about it, but it's time to do something about it, at least take a stab at it. You're always welcome to join Big Noon Sports via the phone at 205-342-9904. You can also message us on our app, Tide 100.9. Let's go to the phones. Tom has joined Big Noon Sports on this Wednesday. How you doing, Tom?
Hey, I'm good. Hey, I know it's the end of football season, and I know the Saban rumors get spread like wildfire, and I would say probably 95% of them that you hear are false or, you know, just hearsay. So I've got one. I'm not saying that I know what I'm talking about. I just know that I've got a good friend that works with the Alabama team doctor, Lyle Kane. I was told that Saban was coming in today from Orlando and was wanting to schedule an emergency meeting this evening, and he wanted his attorneys present. So I'm just curious to know if y'all heard anything about that, and could that be a sign of his retirement?
Well,
no, I haven't heard anything like that.
I'll say this. I have gotten 5 texts probably in the last 5 minutes concerning this. And
yes.
I don't know anything about it other than it's buzzing. And I honestly can't say anything other than the fact that I have received texts that says, you know, basically each one says the same thing. Got a reliable source says that there's a mandatory meeting at Alabama today.
Right.
So okay. I don't know. That's all I can do is just tell you exactly what I just did. Yeah. Is that I'm getting texts, and I was wondering if you're going to bring this up, because this is really strange. I got to say, I can't remember this ever happening, of getting so many texts at the same time. But I can't believe that Nick Saban would be telling the team that he's retiring. but I don't know. I, like I said,
why
I don't have any information.
Why would you do this so suddenly?
I mean, I just don't have any information.
That doesn't sound like Nick Saban.
No, it doesn't. And I think it's strange that my phone is at, it's just blow. I got two more since we've been talking.
Well, maybe Tom's just broken the story of the decade.
And the reason I say this is because I get a lot of information from this individual, and it's normally concerning private stuff, concerning, you know, injuries of players, which I never, ever comment on because there's really no reason to do so. And there's not been a time that he was wrong.
Ooh.
So that's
well,
why
but we
I'm,
do... According to your sources, the meeting has been called and it's been labeled an emergency meeting, but the subject is yet to be determined.
Correct.
What I've been told, it's a mandatory meeting, but
right.
I can't, like, if I were to, I couldn't write this right in good faith. I'm only talking about it because I can explain exactly where I'm getting the information. That's from just text messages from people who I know. I gotta say though, none of them are reporters, so take it for what it's worth, but it's certainly something worth monitoring here in the next few hours. And if you see Nick Saban trending on Twitter anytime soon, it should pay attention.
Appreciate it, guys.
No, thank you, Tom. Well, it's really hard to speculate on something like that, not knowing the topic. The term that's been used, emergency and mandatory meetings, they are of great concern. But this would not be in Nick Saban's MO to walk in there and say, I'm leaving. I would think he would do this in a very prepared way. That's not his way to do things.
Now, yeah, I wouldn't think he would
subject?
Be
I guess
flying
so.
Up from Orlando. I just
has he been in Jupiter? It seems like he'd fly out of Tampa.
Yeah, isn't Jupiter?
Jupiter's on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, it's on the Gulf side. Yeah.
Ah, we have a new topic on what was normally going to start as a slow day. All right, you're listening to Big Noon Sports coming up. We'll ask another guy that certainly is in the loop when it comes to the University of Alabama football, and that's Wes Neighbors. He's all-SEC center, now hosts a very, very popular show up in North Alabama in Huntsville. Wes will be with us next on Big Noon Sports, brought to you in part by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker.
Lee Thompson is known as the Bama broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, it's Lars and Matt. Wyatt Fulton is at the controls. Wes Neighbors is standing by. I must correct myself, and I'm embarrassed because I normally pride myself with the knowledge of U.S. geography. Jupiter is on the Atlantic side of the Florida Peninsula. His old place, I believe, was on the Gulf side, just south of Tampa.
Yes.
And Jupiter is north of Fort Lauderdale and very much south of Daytona. But that's a place where Tiger Woods and now Nick Saban, all those places, all those guys live. But I also think that
I think the biggest airport
that would be nearby to fly out of there, unless you went to Miami, I think you could certainly go to Oregon. I mean, to Orlando.
I would think there'd be a little private FBO that he would do. He's not flying commercial.
Nick's not flying on America.
I think
only
Tom
Lars and Matt do that.
Yeah. Isn't it like a little island that he's on, like a little peninsula? I'm not sure, but I think Tom Brady is building a house there as well. Or maybe Giselle did.
It was a little thin island when he lived.
Gasparilla.
Well, yeah. But that island was like a mile wide and 10 miles long or something like that. Wes Neighbors would know since he flies in and out of those places on his private jet on a regular basis. Hey, Wes. It's Matt Lars, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. How y'all doing?
Good. Do you know where Jupiter, Florida is?
Yeah. It's really right across from... He was at Boca Grande. It was an island y'all were talking about. Yeah. It's right across from there on the other side. But, you know, Boca Grande got destroyed in the hurricane. Yeah. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it. He didn't call and ask me, so I don't know.
Well, and I know you have a show of your own and stories that you follow, but evidently the social media world's blowing up that Nick Saban's called some kind of meeting tonight in Tuscaloosa. Have you heard that? Do you have any information to share with us?
I have not, but I'd be shocked if it's for him to retire.
Me too.
Be shocked. I mean, he might put a time on the thing. You know, he might be saying, hey, I'll touch one more or two more years, but I don't have any information about that. But yeah, I heard it was yesterday. So, I haven't heard it from anybody that I would think would absolutely know what's going on though.
No, I haven't either, but I have gotten several text messages about it. Yeah, that's interesting. So, Wes, let's just sort of go back to Alabama's season in general. A lot of people in the media and fans believe it was Nick Saban's best coaching job because clearly this was an imperfect team, but he still got them to the college football semifinals. Just your thoughts on the coaching job of Nick Saban this year.
Well, I mean, so I said publicly after the South Florida game, everybody was freaking out, kind of. I just know, having played, it's not much difference from winning by two touchdowns and getting beat by 3 or 4 points. You know, it's really usually nothing, 2 or 3 plays at the most. And having watched the game, I musingly said that I wouldn't be surprised, because, you know, what's proven this whole time that he's been coaching is a lot of people playing checkers, talking about checkers, and Nick Saban plays chess. And I believe, and I said it at the time, and it kind of looks, you look back, that he knew his team was fractured on who should be quarterback. The fan base was obviously fractured, as they normally are, on who should be quarterback. But after that game, there wasn't a player, a coach, or a fan that didn't think Jalen Milroe should be the quarterback. And I think it brought everybody together. And you just started watching that team get better. They put Jalen Robertson at right guard. He made a big difference. He made a lot of mistakes. He's a young player. That's going to happen. It was the way he played the game, the way he was downfield hitting people, his energy level. That's contagious. And, I try to have a positive, good energy level when I play because I wanted to be contagious. You know, I love contact. He likes contact. That is contagious. People. It was the difference in the offensive line started getting better, and they at the end of the year against Georgia, watch them guys knocking those guys off the ball. I mean, they're knocking people back 2-3 yards and really should have had bigger plays than we had, I thought, from the way they blocked. I mean, and didn't run the ball enough against Michigan, because when we did, we had success and thought we got away from that in the fourth quarter, and it might, you know, could have been the difference in the game. I don't know. It's easy to second guess people, right?
Oh, yeah, especially from your den.
Yeah, I'm an expert in my den, by the way.
Well, you have a lot more expertise than any of us. But, Wes, you have probably answered this question, I guess, 50 to 100 times, but I'm going to ask it again because you played the position. You were a center, and a darn good one, I might add. But you never had to operate. I don't remember you ever having to snap into a shotgun formation. Was your quarterback?
Well, we had some, but not every play. And I hated it, to be honest with you.
What was difficult about it? What makes that such a task?
Well, because you're playing against somebody really good, is being effective blocking him, and having to. I mean, I guess if you did it every day, right, that you get used to it. But man, you just can't. You got to snap then step when you're firing off the ball on when you got a guy under center. You can step and snap at the same time, and that's the biggest difference. So the guy is a half a step or a full step ahead of you, and it makes it hard to block. I mean, if they get penetration on you, you know, and so you can't be quiet as if you need a double team. And that's what – and, you know, the guy he was playing against Michigan, one of the best in the country. He was really good. And,
yeah. You know, and a lot of Washington, it, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, well, they that right tackle never got out of his stance a couple of times. I mean, so my understanding is in the NFL now, they do a silent count, okay? So, like a bad snap against, but, you know, it was pretty clear that the Auburn safety ran up and started clapping, and it should have been a penalty. He came up in the line. If you watch the tape, he comes up right and starts clapping, and then he snaps the ball because you're doing it off the clap. What everybody else like in the NFL does with crowd noise is that silent count where the guard does his arm and taps the center and does his arm, taps the center, and they snap it like that. And there's no cadence. Everybody's watching the ball instead of just going on the snap, which can get, I mean, in loud atmospheres, I mean, you can't hear yourself. You can't hear anybody talking. I don't know how they hear the clap, but they supposedly do. And I think that it had been a lot better, but I don't think the quarterback was comfortable with a silent count for whatever reason. So, because he has to kind of watch the guy doing the count, too, to see when the ball's coming. But I think that it was a combination of playing with Bryce Young, who can catch any snap because he's ninja, and then playing with a young, tall quarterback that is very, very fast, very, very athletic, kind of a little stiff, and then snapping the ball when he's not ready because of people on the other side clapping, which is supposed to be a penalty, but it's not called very much, obviously. They didn't call it then. I heard Michigan was hitting their pads, you know, their leg on their pad. I haven't seen that on film. I did see the Auburn thing on film, though. So yeah, it's kind of a combination of a lot of things. But it's no question it affected the game. I just don't think it was all the center's fault.
No, I agree. I agree.
That he left.
It was an amazing stat. I think it was according to Pro Football Focus that of the 62 or 63 snaps that Alabama had, something like 42, according to Pro Football Focus, were off target. And on that last play, the last snap back, and Milroe has to go down for it. In your estimation, if he catches that snap clean, does he score? Because it just, if you just look at the
I don't
the
think so, no. If you watch it.
You don't think
yeah,
so?
Yeah, I watched it today. So it's like they had the perfect play called for what we ran. Watch the hard corner come in. That play was supposed to go outside the tackle. You watch Roberts pull It's supposed to be a kind of a roll up, come behind him type thing. The corner safety or somebody outside linebacker comes in hard. If he breaks a tackle, does he have a better chance to break a tackle? Maybe, but I can't say it's just a snap. The right tackle got knocked in the damn backfield too.
Yeah, Latham got destroyed on that. Yeah,
destroyed. I mean, that cannot happen. It cannot happen. This game could have been won in so many things. I mean, on the third and eight, I guess we have a tight end that's dragging across the middle. It's just an easy little throw. They rush six. We pick everybody up, and instead of throwing it to the check down, which is maybe a touchdown, 84 gets the ball. I mean, there's so many one plays you can go back. The fumble was the biggest play in the game, turned the game around, in my mind. There's just so many little things. And this team didn't play very well and still almost won the game.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a lot of talent. They had a chance to win the game, and they played as bad as they did against Auburn, in my mind. I mean, there's just so many mistakes and penalties at the wrong time. It's amazing we were in the game. And really, if we score on that third and eight or even come down and make it a two-score game when we fumble, that game's over. It just is. They're not going to score twice. Not because the quarterback couldn't throw downfield. He completed one pass to receivers. You know, you go to the defensive side and we can't cover the back out of the backfield the whole game. So,
hey, Wes, this is really good stuff. You know the business. We got to get a break in. Can you hang on and spend another 5-10 minutes with us, or are you on your way to a meeting?
No, sure.
All right.
I can
Wes Neighbors. All right. We'll continue on Big Noon Sports.
Go inside the Alabama Crimson Tide with the Gary Harris Show.
It's Gary Harris. Coming to Thursday morning on my show, we are jam-packed beginning at 9 a.m. The coach, Ellis Johnson, will recap the college football season. Plus, the Orlando Ledbetter, Falcons beat writer for the AJC.com, talks about the firing of Arthur Smith and who the next head coach might be in Atlanta. All that and more Thursday morning at 9 a.m.
Catch the Gary Harris Show Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Trust your Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny this afternoon, the high today around 50. Clear tonight, the low 35. Tomorrow, partially sunny and warmer, the high 59. Friday, cloudy and windy with rain and thunderstorms. Storms on Friday could be severe, the high 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 46 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage, Matt Coulter, Lars Anderson. Wyatt Fulton is our producer today. Our guest is Wes Neighbors, and we'll get back to football in just a second, Wes, but always want our listeners to be able to catch up with what Wes is doing. First of all, I think you're leading your class out of the University of Alabama in grandchildren. One of your sons is, I think I got this right, doing really well in the coaching world. And then you got your own show in Huntsville. Tell everybody about that.
Okay, so real quick about my kids. Wesley's the safeties coach at Ole Miss, and Connor is the two that are coaching is the head strength coach at Louisiana Lafayette. All of them, all my children are we're most proud. None of them are in jail yet, and the grandkids are wonderful, and I hope they keep them coming. I have nine right now, and I hope they keep coming. That's for sure. So my show's on from 5 to 7. It's The Drive on 97.7 Huntsville. We do have an app that you can follow us, but I don't have all the info on that. that's for Molton to do. Anyway, okay. And then I still do the financial. I work for PAG Group, and through LPL Financial and Neighbors Wealth Management, and we've been doing that for 36 years. So, and then what my dad did before me. So, my brother and I have been in Huntsville the whole time, and really enjoy watching the city grow.
How about the Panthers basketball team, huh?
Unbelievable, right? Unbelievable. Those guys. I want to see him play. The coach invited me to come, and I went, and it's just watching Huntsville basketball is unbelievable. Watched Buckhorn. They won the 6A last year, and that was a great. It was ahead the whole game, and Huntsville came back in the fourth quarter, it's unbelievable how good they are.
Wes,
they're fun to watch.
Wes, Kevin Steele retired. Do you expect that Treverius Robinson will replace him as defensive coordinator, where do you think Nick Saban's going to go? And I actually believe if there is a meeting tonight, I think it's probably to tell his team who the new defensive coordinator is, not that he's going to retire. That's a big if. I don't have any information on that. This is my gut feeling. But anyway, Treverius Robinson, do you think he would be a good fit for the next DC?
So T-Rob, I think that they leaned on T-Rob a lot this year. I think he was making a lot of the defensive calls during the game. And as Lane reported early in the year, and I think he's well capable. Whether that's who Coach Saban hires, I'm not sure. You know, there's a lot of guys in that room, Charlie Strong, there are a lot of guys that – to draw from, so I don't know if they've even decided who the defensive coordinator is going to be yet. A lot of times they won't decide that till after the second signing day, which is what, February, first week in February? So we might not know anything about that for 3 or 4 weeks. And it could be announced today. I don't know. I don't know if there's a, you know, I heard all this, what y'all are hearing today, yesterday. So I don't know if that's the case or not. I'd be shocked, though, that if it was.
Wes, you mentioned
go ahead, Wes.
Go ahead. If you got more, please.
I just think that if Coach Saban had health problems, or he's running better than he did two or three years ago after his hip surgery. He just looks like he's having the time of his life, and everybody said, well, he can go on TV. He doesn't want to go on TV. He doesn't really like the press. I don't know. I mean, he's done. Miss Saban's been coaching him the last 2 years, and he's gotten better. But I'd be, he's doing so well with his dealerships. He has grandchildren now. I just think that he'll be miserable if he quits coaching.
Free Hummers for everybody. How about that? Wow.
I read that his two dealerships in South Florida were worth like $650 million.
Yeah, he's making more. I was told that he's making more money off his dealerships than he is coaching.
Wouldn't be surprised.
So it's really no reason.
Selling Lamborghinis in Jupiter probably has a great future. All right, before we let you go. Talk Seth right. McLaughlin. You said you were sad that he was going to go ahead and enter the transfer portal. In fact, he's already gone. But
he's going to be a Ohio State center next year.
Yeah, and then the future.
Yeah, I don't know. Who's going to play? I have no idea. They haven't played in a practice yet. That's the scary thing. I don't think. I don't know who's still on the roster. You know, 69 was the backup guy. Seth is. I'm not trying to make excuses for him. He didn't have a good game in a couple games this year. There's no doubt. We had too many penalties on the offensive line and too many penalties on the center. I mean, but he'd been a six-year guy next year. Washington had 5 6-year guys. That's why they made it as far as they did. And there were a lot of them were offensive linemen. Offensive linemen get better every year until they get too broke up. They can't play anymore. That's basically what happens. They continue to get better. It's a craft. Being an offensive lineman is a craft. Every year you get better. You see more and more things. You know what to do more and more things. You learn new tricks. It is something that not why many, that's why not many freshmen play. And if they do play, they're going to be at left tackle or right tackle, mostly right tackle, because you always have a little help at right tackle usually because there's a tight end there. Because it's easy to learn, because it's really not very hard. Because you're going to block the guy across from you 95% of the time. Where guard, center, and you got different, more different techniques. In the NFL, center's the easiest position because you always have help. In college, it's the hardest position because they leave you a lot of times on an island. And so it's harder, in my opinion, to play center in college if they really start doing different things, and you have to be more of an athlete in college. And in the NFL, you always have help. They just slide block. They don't do any other protections but slide block normally, except on a few exceptions, which meaning there's no gaps for the inside guys to get through because you always have help. So, and most of the time you're uncovered in the NFL because they're going to play even front, and so you're just helping out anyway. I thought that he would have got better in the offseason because certain teams were doing certain things against him to try to force the bad snap. You know, once they get a tell on you, they're going to keep the good teams. And I thought Michigan was the best coach team we played all year. Because I thought we should have won the game by 10 points. But their coaching, the things they did, and listen, when we didn't cover the back out of the backfield, they just kept running it. Right on fourth and two, that was the same play they ran on the goal line, just the other way.
You always bring your best game. We appreciate it very much, and much continued success with your family and your show up in Huntsville. Thank you, Wes.
Thank you. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks, Wes. Great stuff.
It's really good stuff towards the end there on centers, the position.
Got an Aaron Rodgers update. Interesting story.
Aaron Rodgers. Peyote. Oh, now somebody's going to sue me. You're listening to Big Noon Sports. Back in just a moment.
Hey, everyone.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles, here's Nick Cope.
After the reported blow-up between Giants head coach Brian Daboll and defensive coordinator Wink Martindale, NFL media reports today that the Giants have not begun a search for a new defensive coordinator, and they do not plan to. They want Martindale to be their DC moving forward. The Browns have designated safety Grant Delpit to return from injured reserve, a chance he could play in the playoff opener on Saturday. In the NBA, the Heat reportedly signed coach Eric Spoelstra to a record extension, 8 years, $120 million. It's the most committed money in North American coaching history. On the court, the Lakers edged the Raptors 132-131 behind a 41-point, 11-rebound double-double from Anthony Davis. And in college basketball, both number one and number two went down last night. Top-ranked Purdue fell at Nebraska. Number two Houston suffered their first loss at Iowa State.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. As you heard your Fox Sports update at the top of the hour, and Lars told us first hour that Purdue, number one, went to Nebraska and lost handily. And then Houston also lost at another rather random site. Houston lost at Iowa State. So number one and number two go down. I used to give Purdue kind of the edge, thinking a little bit about Arizona as being a literal number one team in college basketball. But I think it's all over the place now, Lars, and quite frankly, I love it. Another basketball update, and on to Aaron Rodgers. Alabama clocked South Carolina 74-47. The Tide held the Gamecocks to 18 second half points. Now, that's the defense Nate Oates has been looking for. And also, Auburn improves to 2-0 as well with the tie, defeating Texas A&M at Neville Arena by a score 66-55. Our schools are off to a good start. UAB is also 2-0 in American Conference play.
This information about Aaron Rodgers comes from my good friend Richard Deitch, who now writes for The Athletic. Richard and I grew up together professionally at Sports Illustrated. Our offices were literally right next to each other for over a decade. And Richard is just the best of the best when it comes to reporting on media. He's fascinated with sports media. And he is sort of the gold standard when it comes to covering sports media. And he has a piece up that came out about an hour ago on The Athletic, stating that Aaron Rodgers will no longer appear on the Pat McAfee show. And if you've been following Aaron Rodgers, the Jets quarterback, he has come under scrutiny since making comments last week regarding late-night host Jimmy Kimmel. It was Rodgers who suggested that Kimmel's name would appear on documents linking him to Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted sex offender, who is a well-known figure, especially in Hollywood. And then after Aaron made those comments, which seemed to be just like out of left field, although he and Jimmy Kimmel have a little bit of a running feud going, after he made those comments, Kimmel threatened to sue not just Rodgers, but ESPN. And Jimmy Kimmel called Rodgers' words, quote, dumb and factually inaccurate. And then Rodgers on Tuesday backtracked and saying, hey, I never accused Jimmy Kimmel of being a pedophile. But certainly that was the implication, right? And then on Wednesday, Pat McAfee said that, quote, he would love to move on from this situation. And then Rodgers said some more crazy stuff on McAfee's show yesterday, last night, again on Wednesday. And I think according to Richard's reporting that Pat McAfee has the authority and the autonomy to say who he wants as a guest and who he doesn't want as a guest. And he basically just fired Aaron Rodgers. He is done with Aaron Rodgers. And I got to say, like, Aaron Rodgers, he has not acquitted himself very well. I mean, he was just complaining yesterday about cancel culture and mainstream media. Well, guess what? Who is he on the platform of? He was on the platform of a mainstream media sports network. I mean,
sure makes him a little bit of money.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think he was being paid like $1 million a year or something to appear on this. And that, again, that just shows you McAfee doesn't need the money, doesn't need Aaron Rodgers, doesn't need all the headaches that Aaron Rodgers sort of has brought to the show. And I just, you know, Aaron Rodgers wasn't the most likable figure to begin with. And I've talked about this many times on air. You know, I had considered for a long time to have my next book be on Aaron Rodgers. And I know Aaron wouldn't have cooperated and all that. But frankly, I didn't want to spend time in someone's head about 18 months of somebody who I don't necessarily admire. You know, I don't understand Aaron Rodgers. I don't think a lot of people understand Aaron Rodgers. He does things that just seem just
the
so
other out day, Lars, he wanted to make the Super Bowl trophy the color of the Jets green. You wonder if this guy's kind of lost his boundaries. Now, and you said something that's as factual as it gets. He's not a very likable guy. I'm a Packers fan. I don't like him. But I'm sure as heck glad that he's in New York spouting off like this and not still with Green Bay. But you know what else I'll say? And we got a caller on hold. We can continue this discussion with Tommy or whomever. I'm not a big Kimmel fan either. So there you have it. Maybe they should have a cage match. Lars, would you referee?
I would like to see them have a battle of wits. I'll take Jimmy Kimmel any day of the week.
Depends on what day it is for Aaron Rodgers.
yeah.
Let's go to Robbie. He has dialed 205-342-9904. Hey, Robbie.
Hey, bud. What's going on, fellas?
We're just hanging out,
hey,
man.
Hey, my friend. How you doing?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, good game last night with basketball. I was glad to see it. They got after it. Started out kind of slow. I don't know. I know, Matt, you were, I think, catching the Mountain Brook game and seeing how Sarah played, Pasnik. But they had a lot of turnovers again, but they got that corrected. I don't think they had but one or two in the second half. But they had like 15 in the first half. It was ugly to start, but.
And, so, so we're talking to Robbie Glenn, former Alabama baseball player who co-hosts with us often. Robbie, you and I have been texting. What are you hearing about these Nick Saban rumors and the supposed mandatory meeting this evening?
I don't think it's anything like y'all were saying. I mean, that he's not going to call a mandatory meeting and get attorneys for him retiring. I mean, that wouldn't mean anything. I think it was a meeting yesterday they were supposed to have, and it didn't happen, and they're calling for it. But it's probably, like you said, it could be getting a defensive coordinator, could be getting some new hires, or just going over bonuses. I don't know if that's come out yet. You know, they do it at the end of the year. Coaches get raises, bonuses. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's anything. I don't think it's an emergency, like, but who knows? The person I talk to doesn't seem too worried about it. So I think they'll be fine. I don't think it's anything to worry about with Saban retiring or anything. That's the furthest thing I would think.
Yeah, I agree. I just it's just funny. It's just you know, Robbie, you're just like me, I'm sure. You're just getting all these texts from people who are just, you know, kind of saying some wild stuff. But I really think it's nothing. I really think it's nothing. If it was something, Chris Lowe would be reporting it from ESPN. Trust me, Chris Lowe would be all over this. What did you think of Alabama basketball last night and their performance in their decisive win over South Carolina?
Well, like I said, you know, when I was talked yesterday, I was like, I'm always worried about if our shots aren't falling, can we get the points in the paint against a bigger team? Not taller. I mean, our guys are tall, can run, but we just don't have the meat. You know, we don't have those thick guys in there. Sometimes we get bullied around in there. And they did, but still, our guards led the team in rebounding, which is kind of scary. But Pringle, I thought, did awesome. He got in there, mixed it up. He stayed out of foul trouble, and he frustrated their big guys. And we didn't play a great game. They frustrated. They slowed it down, and we still pulled away. And, well, like you said, only gave up like 18 points in the second half. We were all over them. And with Nelson, he had an off night again, and we still ran away. So imagine when he picks it back up and starts scoring. He had 0 points. And I don't think he only had like 2 rebounds. I don't know what was going on. He just wasn't engaged in the game. I don't know if he had a bigger guy guarding him and kept frustrating him or what. But now they go to State Saturday, which is a tough place to play. So hopefully they can keep it rolling. I like the way they're playing, and you can't say enough about Sears. I mean, 31 points. He looked like that rim must have been huge last night. Everything went up. He was putting it in.
Well, right now he's paving the way to be the SEC MVP, but that is 16 games away. We can't.
Oh yeah, that's a lot of.
There's a lot of basketball to be held. I will say this about Grant Nelson. There's a big difference. You know, mileage wise and inside play wise between where he was. Was he at Montana State I don't know what conference they're in. They in the Mountain. I don't know. They're obviously in a much smaller league. And then you get to the SEC, it's a big difference. But I also think that he has the skill set to adjust.
Oh, definitely. He does. And I think that's what it is when he played in that league. Basketball is basketball, but when you're getting challenged every game the way he is now, you don't have those off nights where you can just, I can coast and still get 30. He's got to bring it every game because he's going against top teams now every game. So I think that's where he's having trouble adjusting. But he'll figure it out. He's a talent. So he'll get hot again, and they'll need him right at the right time.
Pitchers and catchers are reporting here in just a few weeks. I love that, and I want to get you on. Let's talk some baseball soon, some Alabama baseball team. Yep. Thanks, Robbie.
Sounds good. All right, guys. Bye. Roll Tide.
All right. Indeed. All right. You're listening to Big Noon Sports. When we come back, we got Steve Irvine. We'll talk some basketball with him right here on Big Noon Sports with Matt and Wyatt and Mark.
Babe.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny this afternoon, the high today around 50. Clear tonight, the low 35. Tomorrow, partially sunny and warmer, the high 59. Friday, cloudy and windy with rain and thunderstorms. Storms on Friday could be severe, the high 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 49 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
It is Big Noon Sports. Matt, Lars, Wyatt. Our guest is Steve Irvine. Wyatt just sent us on our text thread here. Pete Carroll out as head coach in Seattle. Could remain with organization, but won't be the head coach. Steve, I hate to just line you up and throw you high and inside the minute we get out of the box, but I was a little surprised by that. Had you heard that yet?
No, that's the first I've heard of it, to be honest with you. It is a little surprising. I don't know that it should be surprising. I do think it's got a little stale there, but he's had a lot of success there. That's news to me for sure.
And, there was an ESPN report that says Pete Carroll plans to return Seahawks for 15th season. Lars?
Yeah, no, at age 72, he is the NFL's oldest head coach, and he has been the NFL's oldest head coach for several years. He did sign an extension in 2020 that runs through the 2025 season, and I think it is possible that he will stick with the organization in some capacity, but I think Seattle is just looking for a reboot. Right? Get a younger head coach and perhaps draft your quarterback of the future and have a coach and a quarterback tied together, right? A young quarterback. That seems to be like the winning formula in the NFL right now have your team be really bad for 1 year or a couple years, especially 1 year, get a high pick, get a new coach who's offensive minded, and he and that new quarterback you draft in the first round will be tethered at the hip. So, Steve, this isn't all that surprising to me. You've spent a lot of time, lived on the West Coast. How did you view Seattle as a franchise, just sort of as it has been run over all these years?
Well, I mean, I think obviously when he came in, I think it's a very highly thought of the way they ran it. You know, The one thing is, and I think what you just hit on was you know, an offensive-minded head coach. I think that's what we're looking at here. I mean, you know, obviously they won a lot of championships with their defense. I mean, obviously hey, Russell Wilson was tremendous when he was there, and Marshawn Lynch, and so they had some guys. I'm not saying it was just defense, but you know, that's really kind
of
how he built
Legion
it.
Of Boom. Legion of Boom is that was their calling card. Yep.
Yeah, that's what you think of. That's how they won games, you know. And so I think that, you know, I think the key is that that they do need. I think this day and age, you know, maybe that's what you need to look for. You know, a guy with, well, at least there, but offensive minded. But no, it was always a franchise that, you know, got a lot of respect in the West Coast, but because of the way they ran things, you know, once he got there. I mean, there were some times before that they had a couple of years were okay, but. You know, weren't, you know, they were just kind of an afterthought until he got there, and you know, he built it into, you know, what they are. And and I agree, I do think they'll find a way, or he'll find a way to stay there. And the crazy thing is, you would never guess that guy's 72 years old. you just
like
wouldn't.
Saving.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same. You know, I mean, if you line up the coaches, all the NFL coaches, it's okay. You know, line them up from oldest to youngest. You know, I mean, I have to look at him and see if anybody looks older, but certainly the way that with their energy and stuff, he would not be the one that you would think is the oldest.
There's so many guys that are so young, too, but that's a topic for a different story. Just as long as – one more question on the NFL, since you're so good at being able to just cover all topics. Who do you like right now as we head into the playoffs?
Boy, I mean, you got like Baltimore. I mean, I think they've got the best quarterback in the NFL right now, the way he's playing. You know, I don't know, you know, if you know how you would say. I don't know how to, you know, everybody's got their own opinion on that, but you know, I think it starts with their, you know, I like the way they're playing defense. You know, I just think they've got right now. You have to like the way they're playing. I mean, I do. You know, and from there, I think it's just it's kind of who gets hot. You know, I mean, I think, you know, there was a time this year that I would have said, hey, Miami's as good as anybody. And, you know, they get hot. You know, maybe they have a chance. You know, Buffalo is done, you know, and then they find a way in. And, you know, so I don't know. I think it's you know, to me, in my opinion, I think that right now, Baltimore is who I would look at, but you know, other than that, it's kind of a crapshoot. You never know what, you know, what Dallas you're going to get. I mean, you know, Dallas has been tremendous most of the year, but now we're in the playoffs, and they find a way in the playoffs to not be tremendous, you know, at least recently. So well, for a long time. So I don't know. I enjoy the fact that you look at it and go, and you probably have, you know, five different people might have five different opinions, and I think that's great.
Yeah, it certainly seems like there's more parity than ever in the NFL, and that's how the league is structured, you know, just through how the draft works, how the salary cap works, and I don't think it's a coincidence that, gosh, I read this stat, like of the 50 most watched sporting, or 50 most watched television programs last year, something like 48 were NFL games. I mean, it's just crazy how the NFL absolutely dominates our culture when it comes not just to sports, but just American culture. Just sticking with the NFL for one more second, you mentioned the Ravens. Who do you like in the NFC? And it's so fun because, you know, when Matt and I talk about the NFL, as we do often, it's just on every team, there's such a huge Alabama connection. And the team that I'm just most intrigued with in the NFC is one that has a bunch of Alabama guys, and that's Philadelphia. You know, what is going on with this team, and can they put together a run? Because at the beginning of the season, everybody was thinking, oh, Philadelphia, Philadelphia, Philadelphia. But Jalen Hurts has been struggling lately. I don't know if it's because of injury or other factors, but just your thoughts on the NFC.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty wide open. I like San Francisco a lot. You know, obviously, I think that, you know, you'd have to, you know, I almost want to start there, you know, but, you know, in a quarterback-driven world, I mean, Brock Purdy's been great, but you know, I don't know that he's a, you know, I don't know. I just sort of have a few doubts about him at times, but I think it's pretty. I'm really intrigued to see how the Lions play. You know, I love Dan Campbell. I think that he's tremendous, and I think they've got a very staff has played well, and they've got a very good team. But you know, this is a situation I hadn't been in. So you know, we'll see there. And I think that's the one thing about, you know, going to your Philadelphia point. I think that's the one thing that you have to wonder. They have been there, and they know how to win this thing, and they know how to, you know, get through this thing. So we'll see if they can turn around. I don't know. I mean, I've watched them, and I don't know what's going on there. I do think that there's some. Jalen Hurts has to be banged up, you know, in some way. I mean, he has to, just the way he's playing, and there just seems to be a disconnect in some way, and I'm not sure. I mean, you'd have to sort of be in there to sort of understand why, but I don't know, just a little bit of disconnect. And but again, I mean, this is a different time of year, and you know, they know what it takes, and so we'll see if they, you know, we'll see what happens.
Steve Irvine as our guest. Steve, can you hang around just a few more minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, because there was a Steve Irvine sighting as I was sitting in my den last night. Thought it was kind of cool. All right, we'll be back with that information and more on Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as Roll Tide as Houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Magic City Impact is the website that you can dial up and get more information on and read what Steve Irvine's been doing lately. But it has great influence and is helping out the collective cause at UAB. He is our guest on Big Noon Sports. Steve, last night I went and watched the Mountain Brook basketball men's team play. I don't know if you've seen Ty Davis play or not, but that's Tyler Davis's. He's the head coach. It's his son. Signed with Creighton. Unbelievable kid. He can literally cross court and pop it up. But that, I guess that was my plug to go see this kid play. But first, I wanted to make the point that I got home just in time to watch a little bit of the Auburn A&M game, and they were doing a little pan of the scoring table, and there was Steve Irvine, all the way from Priceville to Auburn. I'm
wasn't
assuming
me.
That was you. It wasn't
it
you.
Wasn't me. It wasn't me. Poor guy. Whoever it was, I feel sorry for
Steve,
him. He looks like me. But
you have a doppelganger. I swear it
was
you.
Oh, poor guy. Poor guy.
You were not at the Auburn game last night.
No. I would love to have been there. Now, don't get me wrong, but no, it wasn't me. Well, I feel bad for that guy, whoever it was. I'll have to go back and watch that and see.
Oh, man, I swore it was you.
No,
and
it was
kind of your. No, man, that's, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for him, sorry for you, sorry for me for bringing it up. Whatever the case may be.
Steve, give us an update on UAB basketball.
Well, they're playing well. They really are. They're 1-6 in a row. You know, they've got to go Sunday and play at FAU, which is really a tough assignment. But you know, right now they're playing so well. I mean, you know, we Matt and I talked at the game the other night about Yashel Lindeborg, just on how well he's playing. I mean, he has three straight games of 23 points, 15 rebounds. You know, in one of those games he added seven blocks, and none of those games he had six assists. So this is a guy that's really special, and he's playing well. But, I mean, I think as a team, they're just playing well. I think, you know, Eric Gaines is a dynamic guy who sometimes is a little too dynamic for his own good, and I think he's playing within himself. I mean, I think he's averaging two turnovers a game over the past eight or so, which is good for him. I mean, that's good. That's really solid for a guy who has a basketball in his hands as much as he does, and they're just they're playing well. I think they've got it figured out. They've got the rotation down, and they're riding the play of Yaks to sort of lead them, and then they're following in.
Where did Yaks come from? I know you and I had this deep conversation. I'm going to get Andy on. I'm going to get Yaks on the show because his story is fascinating. Briefly go through that, but also, I went to games in December, and I don't remember him being there. Is it just because I was not paying attention, or did he receive, like, late eligibility status?
No, he was there. He just didn't really give me any reason to notice him early on. Yaks is a funny kid. He's a kid who only played 11 high school games in his entire high school. He was ineligible for pretty much his whole high school career, and just didn't. He's a smart kid. I think he just didn't really care at the time, and played 11 games, and they found him. He thought, he played those 11 games. He thought, okay, basketball's done. And he actually went to a outdoor tryout for Dominican players. It was a guy in New York. He's from New Jersey, New York City, New Jersey area. And a guy just held a little thing mainly for JUCO coaches to come in and watch. And they didn't have a gym, so they did it out on the playground. And he apparently killed it in that. And Arizona Western coaches were there in Yuma, Arizona, and they offered him a scholarship to there, and so he spent 3 years there. Didn't want to go. Said he was crying on the plane the whole time because he didn't want to leave. But his parents kind of made him go, and so he's really a guy. He's kind of a novice to the game, really. But the weird thing is, being a novice to the game, both of his parents are basketball players who played. One of his parents has been in Dominican. The other is from Puerto Rico. And they both played on their national team at one point, a national basketball team at one point. So he's a basketball family, but he grew up wanting to play baseball because that was his grandfather's love, and never really played much basketball until that. And now that's why I think but his confidence early in the year, he had no confidence. It was almost like he didn't feel like he belonged there. And now as it's gone on, he realizes he definitely belongs out there, and he's a star. And so he's a different guy than when you saw him earlier in the year, no doubt.
What's the ceiling for this UAB team? Are they a possible NCAA tournament squad?
I mean, I think they're possible if they keep playing this way. But the problem is, I don't see them beating Memphis in the tournament, and you got Memphis and FAU right now are obviously the cream of the crop of that conference, and I'm not sure that if they keep winning and they keep playing well. I mean, I know FAU's dropped some games, but they're still really good, and so I'm not sure that this is a three bid league right now. But if UAB can find a way to, beat Memphis at least once, beat FAU at least once, and wins out, and, gets to the semis of the tournament at the worst, then, possibly, because they're going to have a good enough record. They dropped some games there that is going to hurt them. And so we'll see if it's a three-bid tournament, if a three-bid league, if they get to that point. But, they got a lot of work to get to that point. But I really think right now, if they keep progressing as a team, then it certainly are a possible NCAA tournament team.
Have you had a chance to watch much Alabama? Well, I thought you were at the Auburn game last night.
Yeah.
But both of these two teams have bolted out of the gate 2-0 in league play. And I think they've managed to win one on the road and one at home, too. And that's anytime you win on the road in the SEC is a big thing.
Yeah. And, boy, and how good is Mark Sears right now? My goodness. I mean, he's leading the conference in scoring. That game the other night, second half and really all the way through, man, he's really playing well. And, the thing is, he's got the basketball in his hands so much, he doesn't really turn the ball over a whole lot, a couple turnovers a game. You know, certainly he's a streaky type of shooter that we could, you know, he's had, he had six the other night against South Carolina. I think he had eight, I believe it was eight against Purdue. And, you know, he's kind of carrying him right now. You know, I think that, I like to, I mean, I don't necessarily like the way they're playing. I think they're playing better, you know, and I said this before, and I really think that you're starting to see this a little bit. I think those three games that they played against Purdue and Gonzaga and Creighton, I think those have really paid off. They won four straight since then, you know, and, you know, obviously I don't think they played great against Vandy, but they won at Vandy. But since that time, you know, I think that's really helped them. I think that scheduling helped. That didn't help your overall record, but, you know, and you would have liked to won one of those three, but they didn't. But I like the way they're playing. I think they need a little more consistency from Grant Nelson, I think, but, you know, I like Estrada and, we'll see. And Auburn, boy, they're playing well. I mean, they you know, and you get them, you got to go to their home court. That's as tough as anything. And, you know, Alabama coming up, you know, has Tennessee and Auburn back to back. And of course, you got to get rid of Mississippi State's played well. And that's what Alabama's got next. So they just got to keep going, and keep riding Mark Sears.
You mentioned Auburn and just how successful they have consistently been since Bruce Pearl took over the program. Then you go about 150 miles away and how successful Nate Oates has been, being the number one overall seed heading into the NCAA tournament last year. And really, this is a question for both Steve and Matt. Has there been a time in sort of the state's history where you have Alabama and Auburn playing this well, not just for one year? I mean, I get it. I know that that's happened before, but I think we can now label it sustained success of both programs. And is that just a reflection of the fact that they have an elite coach guiding them? And I'll start with you, Steve.
I don't recall a time that both teams have been on this type of roll, you know, together, you know, over, like you said. I mean, there's been years, obviously, but, and I do think it comes from the head coaches. I think also, you know, I think a lot of Auburn's success is building that building in the right way. You know, when they decided that, you know, build a new arena change the arena, you know, building it smaller and kind of setting it up as a, you know, it's almost like a destination spot, you know, for people to go to. And I think that's been a big part in their success, you know, but ultimately I think it comes down to having the right guys at the top. And both of them are such good recruiters, you know, cause that's what it comes down to. You gotta have players, you know, and they both have done a tremendous job and will continue to do a tremendous job of bringing guys in there. So this thing's not going to end. I mean, they're here for a while until, you know, unless something crazy happens. But this is, I think we're going to keep riding this.
Well, I think you throw Andy Kennedy into the mix here too, and all these teams are playing very, very well. But fortunately, I was around in the 80s, and when there was Wimp Sanderson and Sonny Smith and Gene Bartow, and these teams were winning their own leagues or finishing at the top, and they were all going to the NCAA tournament. It was truly the best time for basketball in the state at the college level. Now we've got coaches back that are similar in their abilities to recruit and coach. I think that it's going to flourish for several years. Steve, I'll let you go, but I'm going to tease our next segment. I'm going to tell you why sometimes Alabama and Auburn, UAB struggle on the college basketball floor. But I want to thank you for your time. I'll see you at Auburn.
Okay, that sounds good.
I'll find that guy for you, okay?
All right. I appreciate that.
All right. Steve Irvine from MagicCityImpact.com. We'll be back in a minute.
Weekday mornings at 6 a.m., The Martin Houston Show.
Join us tomorrow for a recruiting edition of The Martin Houston Show. Will also continue the conversation as we evaluate this 2023 moving into the 2024 Alabama football team. We'll look at some KPIs. We'll also have some true false. We'll have those conversations and more. And most of all, we want to invite you to get in on the conversation at 205-342-9904, the Alabama One Hotline, or post your thoughts, comments, questions, and ideas into the chat. We'll be looking for you tomorrow on the Martin Houston Show, powered by Max Sports on Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC.
Catch the Martin Houston Show from 6 to 7 weekday mornings on Tide 100.9.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny this afternoon, the high today around 50. Clear tonight, the low 35. Tomorrow, partially sunny and warmer, the high 59. Friday, cloudy and windy with rain and thunderstorms. Storms on Friday could be severe, the high 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 50 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports. Matt, Lars, Wyatt, we wrap up this Wednesday edition. What I was going to add to talking about Alabama, Auburn, and UAB basketball back in the 80s was just fabulous. I always joke that these three coaches really extended our budgets at TV, radio, and newspapers because they all made tournaments and they all went deep into the tournaments. And, you know, you're trying to cover three teams at the same time. One's in California, one's in New Jersey, and the other one's in Tampa. But, man, was it fun. I think one of the things that we have seen fall, and I hate to say this because of the players that are out there now, but, Lars, and you weren't here. In fact, you were probably 10, 11 years old. There was a time when Birmingham High School basketball was iconic. You had Reggie King. You had Alan Murphy. You had Chris Giles. You had Buck Johnson. Good grief. And Ennis Watley. Good. It was just amazing. And you could just pick a high school game whatever night of the week and go watch it. You were going to see a potential college star. And Alabama doesn't – Birmingham doesn't have that anymore. Remember Andrew Toney in the NBA?
Oh, I loved him. Number 22, could just stroke it from three. Yep.
He'd get across the court and launch it and make it. But he's a Birmingham guy.
And for whatever reason,
it just has fallen off in the last 40, 50 years. But it used to be so fertile as a recruiting ground. And I miss that. And I have a lot of respect for the guys that are coaching now. But you're talking about covering Wimp, Sonny, and Gene Bartow. Just think about that for a minute, Lars. Just the difference in their personalities. Yeah. Wimp was a grouch. Sonny was funny. And Gene was X's and O's and all about business. So it was a fun time. I miss it greatly.
Yeah, and, you know, that's why I didn't want to get ahead of myself and say, hey, this is sort of the golden era here of college basketball in the state of Alabama, because I'm aware of the time that you covered and how dynamic the coaches were then. But I think the future is really bright for both Auburn and Alabama in hoops and also UAB. And so it's going to be fun to watch moving forward. Matt, if you don't have anything.
Let me interrupt you real quick. Pat held on through the Steve Irvine interview, and he's on hold, and I want to put him on as we wrap up the
show.
If nothing else, Pat stands for patience. Pat, how are you?
Man, yeah, but I appreciate you taking my call. But I disagree with last caller a little bit about, we need an upgraded arena. We need something, a little something done. Everybody says they want to build a 10,000-seat arena. Is that not right? Where's the number out of that seat capacity of that new arena? Isn't it somewhere around 10,400, 10,500?
The one at Auburn? Yeah, it's right at...
No. The one they want to build at Alabama.
Now that
I think they do want to scale it back a little bit because that is the new trend all throughout college sports and professional sports.
I understand. And that's why we shouldn't be playing any of our NCAA football national titles in Mickey Mouse 70-seat stadiums, 70,000-seat stadiums. It's ridiculous. It makes it to where when they're giving 1,500 tickets to students on both sides, what I'm saying, it's pitiful. And I can remember when I sent my boys out to California in 09 for the championship, 1,200 undergrads got tickets and 800 grads got tickets. 2,000 students was it. And that's not right. We got 40,000 students. What about like Ohio State, 70,000. Yeah. Right down in Central Florida down there, 60,000 students. And you go into school, shouldn't you have a right to buy a ticket under $500? And it's the same thing with what it's going to make basketball be at Alabama. I'm retired now. Hey, how do you say that fixed income deal? I like going to the basketball games. And I'm making a joke about the fixed income. I got plenty of money. But that ain't the problem. I do. But what about the people that don't? But, however, last night, my row, I got seats, season tickets, 16 rows up. Nice seats. Well, there wasn't anybody on my row but me. My other tickets that were going with me were down with COVID crap. She's a doctor, and then and anytime you're dealing with COVID day in and day out, you shouldn't go to work, but you got COVID, you feel bad, you yucky, whatever, and you don't need to go contaminate anybody else. But that's what it. We had. That was the most fantastic second half of basketball I've ever seen, period, ever. What Nate Oates did on his adjustments at halftime. Now, this team that we played beat Mississippi State, who we're going to play next. It doesn't mean anything in basketball. What do you guys think?
Wow, you have hit on a lot of numbers. First of all, Pat, if you got lots of money, I have one suggestion for you. Advertise, okay? Yeah.
That's a great call, Pat.
It was a great call. I don't understand. I understand why Auburn went to the smaller arena. Auburn is a destination basketball, okay? It's hard to get people to go to Auburn for a basketball game on a Tuesday night, okay? Weekends?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
but Alabama does not need a 10,000-seat arena. Alabama needs a 15,000-seat arena.
Well, hey, look at Kentucky. Hey, Kentucky seats 20-something thousand. Yep. Hey, and eventually, if Nate keeps winning, we can seat 15,000 there. It's just, and I don't understand, what it is. I mean, it's a lot of things. Hey, but, just like last night, hey, I went and got a plain hot dog and a bottle of Coca-Cola, and it was $10.98. The student can't afford to eat that.
Golly, I think you got a good price. I paid like 16 for that the other day. So
but that was at a major stadium, though, was it not? I that's a bottle drink and a plain hot dog was $11. The average student can't do that. And therein lies part of our issue too. We start charging them. Because I think the answer to our NIL issues, and Ryan disagrees with me on the next show, but I want to charge students $50 per game, including the Western Kentucky games, and they get a seat with their name on it. Or not with their name, but you know what I mean. They get an assigned seat. They don't have to go waiting long.
Pat, you need to call this show more often.
I hear him calling. We'll call back at another time when y'all get more time.
Yeah, you need to. That's a good point.
All right. Y'all have a blessed one. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Pat. Awesome stuff.
All right. Lars, let's do it again in 22. We're out of time.
Wesley Financial.